Scotland. Conan sat brooding in the great hall, drinking ale that was too damn weak. Ale was always brewing, and too many were working in the buttery that never had before. When Connor had said they were going to have to ration the ale to only dinner, thank God Ray Sheldon, the McTierney's closest friend, ally and neighbour, had not been happy with the decision. He had ordered his people to begin making ale as well, and after a week they'd begun getting a delivery every day. Connor manoeuvred through the crowd of men who had come in out of the rain and slid into a chair next to Conan. Immediately a servant handed him a mug, which was another thing that had run out. It was fortunate that people brought their own utensils to use on their journeys, otherwise many of them would not have anything to eat on. Connor took a swig and wrinkled his nose at the weak flavour. It needed less water and more time. They were just lucky that the last few harvests had been extremely good, and there were enough oats for the crush of people who had seized McTierney Castle and its lands for the last few weeks. He looked at his brother.
"You look in a fouler mood than normal. I've decided I hate your wife."
Connor took another gulp.
"That's not news. You've disliked her for various reasons over the years, but the last one, I think, resulted in you getting married."
"You can seriously say that to me. It's because of her that I'm not married. I'm ready, Vary is ready, Father Lanelly is ready, even the damn dress is ready. The only one who isn't is Laurel. She is now insisting we wait for McInnes to arrive."
"He was our father's best friend. He wants to see you wed."
"Then he should have gotten his arse up here with the rest of Scotland."
Conan looked at Connor.
"It's been almost 6 weeks," he snarled. "That's long enough, and it's time you tell Laurel."
"Tell Laurel what?"
The question came from behind Conan. He glanced momentarily over his shoulder. Hamish and Colin, his second oldest brother from the Lowlands, had come to join them.
"That I don't care to wait for stragglers like yourself any longer."
Hamish nodded to Connor, Colin and Cole, who were sitting at the table, enjoying the frustration of their younger brother.
"It's your fault. We honestly thought the first miss of an error, and we were not alone in that assumption either."
Conan snorted. No one had believed it. No one. Even Ray Sheldon, their neighbour and close ally, had doubted the news. Cole, who had been sitting drinking quietly beside his brother, agreed with Hamish, especially as he too had had doubts the first time he heard the news.
"I mean, would you have believed a herald claiming the great Conan McTierney had fallen madly in love with a beautiful woman who adored him in return and was to marry imminently?"
The missive had been more than that. Laurel's message had also said that they were welcome to join and witness the event. They just needed to bring tents, their own servants, and significant contributions to the food and drink. So, like everyone else, Colin had sent a runner back with a statement asking if the real reason Laurel wanted them to visit was to say goodbye to Conan. For that, he and McKenna would have liked to have come, but would never have left their homes for such a reason, especially as they were expecting their fourth child. And because most heralds were not sent to only one clan, but had to make multiple stops, it had taken almost 2 weeks for the heralds to return to Laurel with words of disbelief, some teasing comments about the insanity of the alleged bride, and requests for proof. The runners had been dispatched out again. It had not been until Hamish received a message from Ray Sheldon, stating that the news was earnest, that he had believed it. Conan was indeed getting married. Then the heralds had returned, all with variations on one theme. The ceremony could not take place until they arrived. Conan getting married was something that needed to be seen to be believed. Colin winked at Conan, which rankled him further.
"I think he just misses his woman," he said playfully, with a massive grin pasted on his face.
Colin was not the sort to smile. The man possessed an unnatural amount of self-control. He could emotionally wall himself off, which made him a superb strategist, but it seemed that after nearly a decade of being married to McKenna and becoming a father to three children, with a fourth on the way, had changed him, and not for the better, in Conan's mind. It also did not help that Colin was right. Now that he knew the feel of Vari's skin, her scent, her passionate response, her greedy need for him, and his insatiable need for her, the idea of not being with her at night was akin to torture. Sneaking to her room might have been possible the first week, but had become very difficult the second week. After that, guests had started to arrive in staggering numbers. The castle had never been so full. But even when Connor had married Laurel, it had not touched this constant influx of people. As a result, Vari and Megan had given up their rooms and were now sleeping with Bonnie and Brenna, and visiting maids now lined the halls in temporary beds. So sneaking into Vari's chambers was not an option. The torture was not only the loss of having her in his bed. It was far more than that. He had not seen Vari practically at all these past few weeks. Dinner did not count, as there were too many people present to make conversation, much less keep one. People kept asking for her attention, and the numbers of those inquisitive people kept growing every day. Conan had assumed this would alarm Vari as much as it did him, but he had been wrong. At dinner, he had groused about how few times he had had a chance to spend time with her, and Vari's response had been to laugh. She had laughed, infecting all those around her, and then had reminded him about the 2 months he had pushed her away, ignoring her, that if she could wait, then so could he. When he had returned from an impromptu trip, and Vari had still been as inaccessible as before, he had begun to worry. What would she be like when it was only the two of them? There would be no crowds to entertain her. It would just be her and him, sometimes for weeks at a time. He had been so desperate, he had gone to Brenna and Bonnie for help. Both girls normally loved all the activity, but even for them, it had been too much. Luckily, Brenna had known Vari's schedule and when to intercept her so they could have a few minutes. The only place had been the bottom floor of the Star Tower, which also served as a storage room. It was the smartest thing he had done in the past 6 weeks, for Vari's actions and first words had put his mind at ease. Vari had gripped his head between her hands and kissed him with a surge of exasperation and enthusiasm. "Can you believe this lunacy?" she had asked. "The only one who isn't here is the King of Scotland, and I'm not sure why, for all his people seem to be camped outside your brother's castle." "Someone has to be responsible enough to stay home." Vari had wrapped her arms around his neck and urged his mouth down to hers once more for claiming. When he released her lips, she said, "Can you imagine if our wedding was the reason behind a string of English raids on castles left vulnerable because all the lairds are here?" Conan had not thought about it, but she was right. If news did get down to certain leaders in England, they might realize the powerful draw of their wedding. While the clan leaders had journeyed north without the majority of their security, those who came had most assuredly taken their best. "All for the wedding of a woman they don't know to a man they respect but don't like," she said. Conan had arched a brow, but said nothing. Vari had shrugged. "It's true, love, but admit it, you feel the same way about them." "Aye," he had replied, as he had nuzzled her neck, not wanting to let her go. "I love you." "I'm surprised with all the things being said tonight." She had pulled his head back and cupped his face in her hands so that he would look at her. "I do not care what they say or think. I only care about you, and I'm so lucky you trust that." Conan had swallowed at the enormity of her words and their impact. It had been damn near impossible not pummeling those who'd wanted to tell Vari about women from his past, but he had remained seated. He had seen the plea in her green eyes, and he had complied. For her. Unable to speak, he had pulled her back into his arms for another steamy embrace that lasted several minutes. He should have asked about all the men flirting with her. When he was around, he ended it, usually with non-verbal threats of harm, but he was not with her much of the time. Almost every lad had brought several soldiers with them, usually their elite guard, The fact that no one knew who Conan was marrying meant that when those soldiers met Bari, they became immediately infatuated. Conan wanted to make sure that she was sending them scurrying and not protecting their feelings, as she was more likely to do if they were nice. But holding her in his arms, he had forgotten everything, everyone. And before he had known it, Brenna had been whispering that someone was coming into the storage room.
I miss my woman, Conan grumbled, glaring at Colin. She's the only person who can carry on a decent conversation, and the reason that I cannot do so right now, privately and within the freedom of the outdoors, is because of people like you.
Me? Colin yelped in surprise. I've been here nearly a week. I got here even before Cole.
Cole threw up his hands.
Blame Hamish. He only arrived yesterday.
I was forced to bring two pregnant women,
Hamish wailed, expressing just how difficult it had been to travel with his wife and also pregnant sister-in-law in those few words.
And there were a lot of us.
Conan fixed a level stare on Hamish.
Why is that? He asked earnestly. I don't know your brother, and I don't know Laird Mackay, and neither of them know me.
Hamish's eyes flew to the end of the hall, where his brother and Laird Mackay were sitting drinking with other powerful lads. All three of them wished they had left a lot sooner. This gathering was unlike any before it, and probably any that would come after. They had missed much by delaying their trip. After the ice storm, the weather had been surprisingly cooperative. Scotland was not a dry land, but it had been a relatively dry spring that had come early. So the grounds had hardened, making it easier, safer, and quicker to travel. Hence, some who might have decided to stay home had changed their minds and decided to come. As the numbers of people and clans grew, more and more realized they would be the only ones not at the event, and sent word that they too were on their way. The training fields and those next to them had been taken over by large tents, corralled horses, and campfires. Training had been replaced with games of skill that anyone could participate in, and for those days it did rain, like this afternoon. Lairds and some of their elite soldiers found their way to the crowded great hall to drink and talk, and the talk had been very interesting. McTiernay was a large and powerful clan, with several strong allies. Those allies also had strong allies, and many of them had come under the guise of seeing the most unexpected wedding ever known, but also so they would not be left out of any potential discussions. Those who were not there were noticeable. Mach Cunnich, Andreas, Hamilton and Kenny were the most obvious. Hamilton and Kenny were the more important to Colin, as they were powerful lowland clans, but Maconic and Andreas were not. But Maconic was just as powerful as the Mackays from the north. But unlike the Mackays, who had few truly trusted alliances due to their history, the Maconics had key strategic relationships in place that stretched from one side of northern Scotland through to Inverness. Ian Mayboyle strolled up to the group and wedged himself in between two McTiernays without worry that they might be offended or would not move. Conan could not think of another person in the world, including their eldest brother Connor, whom they would have willingly shifted in their seats for. But they did for Ian. Conan bit back a derisive comment, not to his future father-in-law, but to his brothers. He had to admit that Ian was a marvel. Bari's father had sold everything of any value that he had wanted to sell weeks ago, and was just as antsy to leave as Conan was.
"That was a pretty good fight you and my daughter had yesterday."
Ian stared at Conan with mirth dancing in his eyes. The old man was intentionally stirring up trouble.
"Only fun if you get to make up, which I didn't."
Ian pursed his lips together, but it did not do much to hide his smile.
"That is true. And furthermore, I won. It's really not fair of Laurel not to let me spend time with my woman right after a fight. Worse, you probably won't win another argument for a long, long time," Cole added, speaking from experience.
Another "aye" came from Colin, and the rest were bobbing their heads.
"'Another reason for me to hate Laurel,' Conan added, directing this one to Connor.
"'She loves this stuff, not me,' Connor said in his defense.
"'Nor me or Barry. We should have just left,' Conan moaned. "'Someday Scotland is going to have a place, some town, that people can rush off to in the dead of night and wed without any fuss.'
Ian took a deep breath and slowly scanned the room. It was full, and only getting more packed as the rain continued and it got closer to dinner.
"'I'm looking forward to tonight's meal. I'm not sure how Fiona manages with these numbers, but the quality of what comes out of her kitchen is still some of the best food I've ever had.'
For the first month, hunters, falconers and fishermen could find enough in the hills and lochs to feed everyone. Then they'd had to start butchering Kylo, Highland cattle that were known for their long horns and long wavy coats.
"'Thankfully, Laurel thought about food when she sent out the invitations,' Cole said.
Conan snorted. "'That only proves she knew exactly what she was doing when she sent out the invitations. The woman is a menace.'
Cole's head snapped back, and he put his hands in the air.
"'Don't look at me!' I'm just glad I'm married and don't have to worry any more about her meddling in my love life, which is just fine, by the way.
Hamish swung an arm over Cole's shoulders and gave him a squeeze.
What? Crichton is now almost two. You never know.
Cole narrowed his gaze.
I know. We agreed. Two were enough. One girl and one boy. Don't need any more. You need to talk to McKenna, Colin grumbled. We have three, one on the way, and I can tell she is nowhere close to done. She loves being a mother and the chaos that comes with it.
Hamish grinned.
The McTierney brood is growing.
He then looked out the window to the steady rain.
Have you noticed that it always rains when it is our turn to use the loch?
Aye, Colin answered, pouring himself some more ale.
He had no idea how much he had had, but no longer did it taste weak.
Looks like another cold one for us men.
With so many at the castle and staying in tents, not only were food and space an issue, but bathing had become one as well. The kitchens were always operating at a furious pace, despite tripling the help. They had no time or room to heat water, leaving all to bathe in the loch, which was also needed by servants to do the laundry. With so many needing access and privacy and space becoming an issue, Laurel had declared the morning for the women, directly followed by the launderers, and then the men could have the rest of the day, since it was impossible to predict when the weather would turn or the games would be over. It had worked, but as the rain usually came in the afternoon, every man was grumbling that it was not fair.
"'I can solve that problem today,' Conan muttered.
"'Could you?' Hamish asked.
Conan nodded. He had been packed up and ready to go now for a month. Initially, he had actually been glad for some more time to prepare. Barry's father had travelled all his life with a wagon and had many ideas to make theirs as comfortable and roomy as possible. As a result, night, storms and cold weather would not be nearly as difficult to endure.
"'Since the day the cart was done and loaded, I have been ready to leave.
Cole, who had been leaning on his elbows, which were on the table, began to wag his finger as an idea occurred to him.
I'm surprised you did not leave and return in the nick of time.
Like you, Conan chided.
And I did leave. I was gone for a week and had gotten back just when you arrived. I actually thought I had arrived just in time for our wedding. I had no idea that Laurel would insist on waiting for every affirmative answer she received.
Hamish grinned. So did Colin, Connor and Cole. Conan looked around. Everyone was smiling.
You all are loving this, he shouted. This is all fun for you. Keep it up, and I'll make sure your trip was pointless by sneaking Barry away and getting married alone.
This only brought more smiles. Barry watched the hard rain fall as she sat on one of the padded seats in Laurel's dayroom, which, along with Connor's dayroom above it and the solar on the top floor, made up the only three rooms in the castle that had not been turned over to guests or extended family. The rain had been falling steadily now for an hour, and with all the people, the grass in the courtyard had been nearly trampled to death. Soon it would be a muddy nightmare. Before the wedding, the large bailey would have virtually emptied during such a downpour. With so many visitors, and so much constantly needing to be done as a result, the commotion never ceased. Another reason the grass had no chance if the wedding was delayed much longer. At first, Vari had loved all the bustle and commotion. It reminded her of Christmastide. There were always new faces, and mealtimes were filled with hilarity as the group got larger. Her father was not the only one who had the gift of gab, and she found herself doubled over in stitches at least twice each meal before their plates were collected. The additional time to make a dress had also been necessary. Laurel and Eileen had enlisted Nan's mother, Susan, to help with the wedding gown. It had been beautiful, with a scooped neck, butterfly sleeves, lace, and a sweeping train. Then Eleanor and Breege had arrived. Breege, whose skill with a needle Vari had heard of for months, took a look and insisted it needed more, and the gown had only become more beautiful. Unfortunately, during the modifications, the five women had chattered, and all concurred that the gown, while beautiful, was not the right style or colour. And they had been right. The luxurious rich blue blio they had made was stunning. Breege had created a subtle floral embroidery all over the shimmery material. The sleeves' wider openings narrowed down to the elbows, in a shape known as a bell sleeve, separated by lace. The front and back corset curved to her body, making her look even taller and slimmer. Vari loved it, and felt beautiful in it. All five had agreed, which was why they'd finished it, but they had also all agreed that it was still not what she should get married in. The next ensemble had made her feel like a princess. Created out of the most beautiful material of jet black and purple crushed velvet Vari's father had acquired when in Europe last fall, the five women had created something truly spectacular. The dress and outer sleeves had been made with the velvet, and the neckline had been detailed with a black braid that also adorned the armbands. The front corset was a stunning purple shade that also lined the inner sleeves. Vari loved it, but she did not want to wear something so dark. So a final dress had been made, and even if all five had thought it too could be outdone, Vari would have stopped them. Nothing could outshine the final lavender gown, and thankfully all agreed. Vari had her wedding dress. Vari had worried about the other dresses made, and that Connor wouldn't like the waist. But Laurel had assured her that Connor would have no idea, nor would he care, as long as it made all the women happy, especially his wife. Vari was very appreciative, and very glad that it was over. She had helped a little, but her stitches were not as precise as Susan's and Breege's. And Megan had only been able to give her reprieves periodically, as she was tasked with overseeing the ever-growing brood. When McKenna had arrived with her son and two daughters, both of whom looked and acted frighteningly like their mother, Megan had threatened to run away. She had not been serious, but she had told Seamus later that she did not want a large family, and hoped that Clyde would be fine with that, since he had six brothers. Seamus had pointed out that he had only one sibling, and thought one or two children the perfect number. Megan had told her that the last time they had been together. It had been a week ago, and they had been out watching the Highland Games. Vari had been capturing on paper some of what she saw, when archery had begun, and she had seen Laurel take aim. The woman was massively pregnant, but that had not seemed to affect her ability to shoot, for she had soundly beat all who had gone against her. That had given Vari the courage to join the competition of dagger throwing. She had been surprised when Laurel, too, had entered. "Connor's men always go on about what I can do with the bow and arrow, but they forget what I can do with a dirk." Then she had looked at what was in Vari's hand and asked, "Can you throw as well?" The competition had soon whittled down to just a handful. That was when Vari had noticed Conan was in the crowd, standing next to a scowling Connor. Neither of them had looked happy to know their loved ones were so deadly. Vari had eventually won, and Laurel had said that her pregnancy was throwing her slightly off. Vari had not thought so, but she would love the chance to challenge Laurel again some day, and told Conan that at dinner. Unfortunately, before he could respond, she had been overheard, and the topic had caused quite a stir of questions being aimed at her. At first, all the attention had been great for her ego and self-confidence, but it had not been long before it had become old, very old. A month of answering questions about her life, her skills with a knife, her drawing, the languages she spoke. Did she think she was smarter than Conan? Did she really love him? How could she tolerate his company, and so many more, had made her want to sneak off, grab Conan, tell the priest their promises, leave, and break in their new cart. She loved the new cart. It was beyond perfect, and she wished she could have joined Conan when he had taken it out for a test run. She had wanted to be there for its first use, but her man had not been happy with all the delays, and she had wanted him to be. She, on the other hand, was not going to be happy until she stopped sleeping with little Bonnie and started sleeping with Conan as his wife. At least she was not in bed with Brenna, who moved around in her sleep. She often woke Megan and nearly pushed her out of the bed, despite its large size. Megan was one of the only reasons she had yet to tell Laurel, but enough time had passed, and the ceremony would be taking place immediately. Megan and Seamus loved each other. It was etched all over their faces, but something had happened at Christmastide, and they stopped talking to one another. Thankfully, they were speaking again, but both were pretending that things were as they had been before. Neither wanted to lose their friendship, and neither knew how to move forward without jeopardizing it. This careful dance they had been doing with each other could not be sustained forever, and Vari feared that Megan would need a friend before long if she made the wrong decision. Because soon, and Vari feared that her wedding might be the catalyst, Seamus was going to give Megan an ultimatum, one he probably did not want to give, but had to. Giggles were coming from behind her, and Vari glanced back over her shoulder. There were so many pregnant women around it was overwhelming. Laurel was due within the month, and Crevin's wife, Rayland, who was due either in May or June, also looked as if she could have a child at any moment. Not much further off was Colin's wife, McKenna, who had been born and raised in the Lowlands, but acted as if she were a Highlander through and through. Myrat, Hamish's wife, just beamed when she was not conspiring. The only wives who were not pregnant were Eleanor, Cole's wife, her best friend, Breege, and Mariel, who was married to Craig and had had a child only a year before. The door opened. In walked a woman whom Vari immediately knew to be both kind and friendly. She had thick reddish-brown hair and a smattering of freckles sprinkled over her nose and cheeks. When she smiled, her brown eyes literally twinkled. Upon seeing who had entered, Laurel gasped. Her hand flew to her mouth, just as Rayland and Mariel squealed with delight.
"Rowena!"
This was immediately followed by,
"Mariel! And the Mahadja! Rayland, you are huge!"
The three women hugged and laughed and danced the best they could, with Rayland being so large. It was only after several minutes of revelry and talking about how Sirik, her husband, had finally been able to break away, that they remembered they were not alone, and why everyone was there. The bride whom no one knew, the bride whom everyone was here to meet. It seemed they really had little interest in Conan. They wanted to meet her, to see her, and determine what kind of woman Conan was willing to marry, and just could possibly be willing to marry him. Vari was tired of it.
"Rowena,"
Mariel said, grinning and gasping for breath,
"meet Vari."
Like everyone, Rowena's eyes grew wide with surprise, and then what could only be labelled as a skeptical smile followed. It was as if they were surprised by her appearance, and then had trouble envisioning her with Conan. "Why does everyone do that?" Vari asked bluntly, pointing to Rowena's face.
"What? That look of surprise. Don't deny it. You are not the only one.
Practically everyone does it when they first meet me.
Why?
Rowena looked back at her friends, who seemed just as shocked by the small outburst. But her husband, Sirik, was very gifted in the ways of diplomacy, and over the years she had learned a few things. First was not to be affronted by honesty. In fact, do the opposite, and embrace it. Rowena sat down beside Bari.
I guess you do probably feel like a specimen being inspected. But trust me, if my expression is like everyone else's, you have not been found wanting.
Bari swallowed. Well, that is a relief. But that smile was not one of happiness. It was more amazed than genuine.
Rowena laughed. Well, first, I was surprised at how beautiful you are. I mean, you truly are stunning. Conan may be a very good-looking man, but he is a difficult one. And since you are being blunt, I will too. I am not a beautiful woman.
You are too, came the cries from her best friends and distant cousins.
I am far from unpleasant, but I am not a beauty, and I know it. I've watched many beautiful women, though, over the past few years. My husband works directly for and with the king in diplomacy matters, so I have seen too many to count around court.
And beautiful women, well, usually seek someone who would fawn over them. They certainly would not be interested in a man with Conan's difficult temperament. As far as my mischievous smile, you are not just marrying a McTierney. You are marrying Conan, the McTierney everyone has heard of.
Bari was not sure she could handle another story about Conan and his life before meeting her. And what she had discovered was that those who only knew Conan by reputation were spreading what they had been told, not the truth. Bari wanted to say it was physically impossible to have been with that many women, to have scorned them and left their hearts bleeding as he heartlessly walked away. She knew the truth. His eye had been caught by a pretty face numerous times, and he could count on one hand how many had turned him down for a kiss. But it had never gone beyond that, because by that time he had found nothing beyond their looks of any interest. He had limited his actual sexual activities to a couple of widows. Who they were she did not know, and hoped never to find out. That was his past. What was important was that Conan had not touched another woman since meeting her, including the times they had not been talking. Despite most everyone's stories about Conan being drenched in fiction, the tales kept coming, usually over dinner and in the earshot of Conan himself. It had taken everything in Conan not to stand up, pummel the storytellers, and create a scene that launched a massive fight. It had happened once before, Megan had told her, but Bari knew the reason Conan did not was because of her. What was worse were the looks from people who did know Conan. They just could not believe someone was willing to deal with his rude behaviour. Rayland had been the worst of them. She and Mariel were not on bad terms with Conan, but neither were they really on good terms with him either. They enjoyed sniping at him and pushed him to snipe back. A couple weeks ago at dinner, both women had been relentless, and when he had something to say to Bari, he had used the same tone and surliness. "This is all your fault," he had said, the malicious tone unmistakable, and aimed directly at Bari. "If you had simply told Laurel no and gotten married when we first wanted to, I would not have had to put up with any of this, especially those two." His eyes darted to a hostile Rayland and then Mariel, who at least looked apologetic for pushing him so far. It was the first time that any visitor had heard Conan be rude to Bari. They had all known he would eventually, and stared at Bari to see her response. Would she explode in anger, making him explode in kind? Would she meekly apologize? Bari had studied him for a moment, and then shrugged. "What really is angering you is that I would do all of this." She twirled her fork around in the air, again, if we had the option. "I have no regrets about wanting a wedding, nor will I suddenly attain them because you, Mariel, and Rayland cannot act like mature adults in each other's company." Mariel's jaw had dropped, But Rayland, who had been listening intently to see how Vari would explode and rip into Conan like she would have, had sat frozen with shock. Her eyes had swiveled to her husband Crevan for support. He had just thrown up his hands and said, "You know it's true. You have been intentionally poking at him every night, waiting to see what will happen." "You should have said something," Rayland had shouted at him. "I'm pregnant, not fragile." Crevan had shaken his head.
"Not until my babe is safely in this world."
Rayland had sat and fumed, and probably would have said more if Conan had not made a threat.
"If you feel that I am so immature, maybe I should leave."
Vari had bobbed her head. "That is one of the better ideas you've had in a while. Go test our card for a week. By the time you return, everybody will have to be here, and we can finally marry." While that had been the perfect response for Conan, it had been the wrong one for everyone else. Vari had been expected to get mad and yell, like all other McTierney wives. Some had begun to wonder if her and Conan's relationship was not one of passion, but more one of convenience. The craziest rumour following that night had been that she was afraid of Conan. Then yesterday, all those rumours, thoughts and concerns had been put to rest. Vari had not been looking for a reason to fight with Conan, and yet that was exactly what had happened. She had gone to her old room in the Warden's Tower to get one of her hemp books, and discovered that every book was missing. She had charged into Conan's room and found them safely among his things. Unfortunately, he had not been there to explain why he had had them moved, but he had been in the courtyard.
"Of course I moved the damn things," he had yelled back. "Do you know who is sleeping in your chambers? Donald and Breege and their three sons."
He had waved three fingers in her face. Vari had forgotten this, but felt it did not matter if Conan had a good reason to move her things. He had done so without telling her. Therefore, he should have expected she would be angry.
"And what would your reaction be if you suddenly found all your things gone from where you knew them to be, just because someone got it in their head that they weren't safe?" "But they weren't safe. They were mine to move." "Aye, and that's why I did it. But trust me, I won't make that mistake again."
All throughout the argument, more and more people had surrounded them. Those from McTierney Castle had stopped for a moment, because it had been something new to watch Conan and Vari raise their voices. But after a few minutes, they'd realized it was no different from Laurel and Connor. The others, however, had been intrigued, and their eyes had been completely glued on the two of them. As a result, it had been impossible to make up after their argument, which was doubly upsetting because she had won. Rowena patted her knee with a smile, bringing Vari's attention back to the women surrounding her. "Sirik told me to tell you that Laird McInnes's group has been spotted and is less than a day away. He will be here in the morning." Laurel clapped her hands together. "Vari, he is my grandfather and Conan's godfather. Once he is here, there is no reason to wait any longer." She levelled her gaze on Vari, whose heart started rapidly beating. "Tomorrow afternoon at sunset, we are going to have a wedding." Chapter 16 Vari stood beside the great oak looking at Conan as they took their vows. The weather was perfect. Not a cloud was in the sky. The rain from the previous afternoon had passed on in the early hours, and since Neil's back was no longer hurting, the rain was not going to return for the rest of the day. The massive crowd of onlookers was indescribable. Vari had been told hundreds had come in, and she had seen many of them in and around the castle. The great hall had been filled with lairds and ladies from clans all over Scotland. The lower hall had been more than full with their elite guards. Tents were everywhere. When she had gone to bathe in the morning, the loch had been crowded with women, and yet she still had no idea exactly how many people had come to watch her and Conan marry until she had stood on that hill and looked out. One could not see hills or grass, only people. It was incredible, astonishing, and almost beyond comprehension. It was all so beautiful. The only ones missing were Conan's brother Clyde and her sister Shanae. She was too new to her vows to be free to travel, and no one knew where Clyde was. Last they had heard from him was almost 3 years ago. He had been among King Robert's forces, who had invaded Ireland in 1315 to free the country from English rule. Both Clyde and Shanae were missed, but Conan and Vary refused to let their absence rob them of any joy. Conan had seen many beautiful women in his life. His brother Connor had married one of the most stunning females he had ever seen. Laurel, with her light blonde hair and blue-green coloured eyes, could captivate a man's soul with just a look. But never had Conan seen anything or anyone who could compare with his Vary. He had seen her radiant in the past, but her beauty shined for all to see. The afternoon sun created a halo effect around her flower-bedecked figure. Vary looked ethereal, almost surreal. Her dress was of the palest lavender satin, with a cream tulle overskirt. Simple, elegant, and unadorned, except at its hem and scooped neckline, where hundreds of seed pearls and lilac glass beads seemed to shimmer. She carried a small posy of violets and cream roses, mirroring the flowers in her hair. Vary looked at him, and Conan could feel his heart melt. Her smile could light up an area on a moonless night for miles. And today, he was the reason behind her smile. It humbled him. This beautiful, perfect creature loved him enough to be his wife. He was not worthy of her. He never would be. But then no one ever would be. Vary's cheeks hurt. She could not stop smiling, and she did not want to. The McTiernay nobody had thought would ever marry was pledging himself to her. She had actually found a man to love, a man who loved her fully and completely, who knew who she was, what she needed, and how to make her truly happy. Conan was not perfect, but he was perfect for her. They would argue and challenge each other, probably daily, but they would also open each other's minds in ways no one else could. She suspected one lifetime with this man was not going to be enough. The happy couple waved to the crowd and headed to where several large bonfires had been erected and were waiting to be lit, signifying the wedding celebration was to begin. Tonight there would be no restrictions on the meat, the bread, or the ale. All were to feast and be merry until there was not a drop left to drink or a morsel left to eat. Megan had been standing near Vary, along with her other closest friends up on the hill. She had been paying attention to the ceremony and the vows, but she had also been scanning the crowd as well. A week ago, Seamus had said they were going to talk directly after the wedding ceremony, whenever it took place. The comment had left her anxious, because she knew what he was going to demand. Seamus wanted a future. He wanted a wife. He wanted her to be that wife. And he wanted to know if that was a dream he needed to let go of, or one she was willing to share with him. All week, Megan had struggled with the answer. Her heart wanted two men. It was impossible for her to choose, but Vary had pointed out an inconvenient truth. Seamus was not forcing her to choose. Her heart had forced that choice upon her when it had fallen for Seamus. Because if Clyde had returned, would she not have to make a choice then? Would she give up a man she had loved for years for Seamus? Or would she choose a man she probably no longer knew over Seamus, who knew and loved her for who she was today? Megan was honestly not sure. She loved Clyde. She had loved him body and soul for so long she wondered if it was even possible to split him from her hopes, her dreams, her heart. She was not sure she could. And would it be fair to love Seamus, but not in the same way? It had been a week, and all Megan had were questions. She still lacked answers. But to Seamus, no response would be an answer. She could not reject her love for Clyde, and yet she could not lose Seamus. Just the thought of Seamus not being in her life made her tremble with fear, an ache that physically hurt. Megan scanned the crowd again, looking for Seamus's tall frame and dark blonde hair. Her eyes were moving from one person to the next when they landed on one face that she would always recognize. She had dreamed of it so many times. It was one that, until that very moment, she had never truly believed she would see again. Clyde. All the McTierney brothers had the same dark brown hair, but only two had grey eyes. The first, Connor, and the last, Clyde. Clyde had come home. He was here, and yet he was not, for it was clear he did not want anyone to know he was here. He looked different. So different that people who stood right next to him, who knew him and should have recognized him by sight, had no idea Clyde McTierney was in their presence. He was much larger than she remembered, and he wore a full beard. His youthful lankiness had disappeared and had been replaced with a man's body. Muscles rippled underneath his laner. His arms were massive, and his hands looked calloused from hours wielding a weapon. He appeared relaxed, and yet his stance made her think he was always ready for an attack. His gaze was on the happy couple saying their vows, and held a strangely detached quality that was disturbing. What had happened to him? Then, without warning, his eyes shifted to hers. Nothing else about him moved, but in those few seconds of mutual recognition, Megan saw it. Love, pain, defeat, despair. And then it was gone. But it was too late. She had seen the truth. In that moment, she made up her mind. She loved Seamus. She did. He was her best friend, her confidant, her support. But he was not her soulmate. Her heart was seared with anguish seeing Clyde hurting so much. As soon as the ceremony was at a point she could move, Megan started running. But Clyde had started moving too, and he was unnaturally adept at maneuvering through crowds. Megan refused to give up and kept charging through, fighting a crowd that wanted to go the opposite direction she was headed in. But finally she spotted him once more and started picking up speed. She knew that Clyde thought that he had lost her because he did not increase his gait once he was alone. She followed him as he made his way through all the tents and temporary stable setups until he reached one. He stopped, untied the reins of a horse, and was leading the animal out of the penned area when he saw Megan. His jaw tightened, and his body froze. Megan, however, was not inclined to stare, and launched herself at him, hugging him, tears streaming down her cheeks.
"You're home! Clyde, you're home!"
she whispered into his chest. Nothing felt better than when his arms curved around her and held her close. Megan felt his mouth in her hair. She absorbed the trembles that went through his frame. She inhaled the one scent that could only be described as Clyde. He was home.
"I've waited for so long for you to come back to me."
Her face was pressed into him, muffling her voice.
"But I knew you would. I knew it."
And then it happened. Clyde changed. Megan could feel it. It was as if someone had poured ice water into his veins. He released her, gripped her shoulders, and pushed her away from him.
"I did not return to you, and I am not home. I came simply to see my brother Mary. Now that I am leaving, and I do not intend to return again."
Megan's breath caught in her throat.
"I don't believe you," she whispered. "You love me."
She reached out and grabbed his forearm. She stared into mercury eyes and saw the truth.
"I can see it. You can say what you want to leave, but you cannot deny that you still love me."
Clyde stood for what seemed like an eternity, quiet and not moving, before he spoke.
I loved you, and you loved me at one time."
His eyes swept down her frame and back up.
"But I'm not who I was. You no longer know me. If you did, you would know that I don't have the power to love anymore. That emotion was stripped from me long ago, so if you have been waiting for my return, don't. This is no longer my home."
Megan's hands flew to her mouth. Her eyes were wide with shock and pain.
"You don't mean that.
I do. I'm not coming back, Megan, he said in a resolute voice, and I am not coming back to you.
Megan stumbled back. She had felt the impact of Clyde's words as if he had struck her physically. She had loved him, the forever kind of love, the kind of love that could not be destroyed or killed, the kind that inspired a person to travel great distances to be reunited, the kind that one seized onto and did not let go of. She had felt that for him, and she had known Clyde had felt that way about her.
She had known it.
There had been no doubt. That was why there had never been another. But it had all been a lie.
"You don't love me," she said.
"I don't even know you."
"You don't want me?"
"I don't want anyone."
Tears brimmed in her eyes once more. She could see Clyde's pain, hear it in every syllable. It was buried deep, so deep that it was one with him.
"Are you happy, Clyde?"
Clyde's jaw twitched.
"Irrelevant question, Megan."
She closed her eyes and tilted her chin upward, hearing her name on his lips.
"It isn't. I need to know that you are happy."
He looked up and refused to look her in the eye for nearly a minute.
"It doesn't matter because I don't want you. Find a man who does."
Using his chin, he gestured behind her. Megan glanced over her shoulder, knowing whom she would see. Seamus. He was standing there, watching, listening, waiting. Pain was etched on his face. He knew she loved Clyde. He knew her heart was breaking. He knew that she did not love him the same way. It was killing him, and yet he remained, for her. He was there because he knew she might need him.
"Go and live your life, Megan. You only get one. Don't waste it on me."
Clyde gave a tug on the reins and led his horse to where he could jump on. Then, without another word, without looking back even once, he left. Megan had known Clyde almost as far back as she could remember. She knew him. She knew the truth. Clyde still loved her as much as he ever had. He was hurting. He was in pain. Something was haunting him, eating away at him, making him believe he could not make her happy. So he had set her free in the only way he knew how. Clyde was wrong, but it did not matter. Just as her heart had known he had loved her as much as she had loved him, her heart knew the awful truth now. Clyde was not ever coming back. Wooden legs took her to Seamus. He said nothing. He only opened his arms and enveloped Megan the moment her body melted into his. He had been so afraid. He had known he loved her, but had not known the depth of his feelings until he had seen her running through the crowd. He had chased her to see whom she was after, and had been shocked to see that it had been Clyde. He had been hugging Megan in a way that left no doubt to anyone who saw them about his feelings. Clyde's love was just as deep, just as sure as Megan's. But when Clyde had let go, Seamus had seen something else in the man's eyes. He had seen it before, though not in one as young as Clyde, but Seamus knew that look. War ate at a man. It hollowed him in ways that someone who had never taken a life, had never stood in the middle of a bloody field after fighting to the death, at first for a cause and then just survival, would understand. It did something. It changed a person. Doing it for years either hardened hearts or turned men into shells. Clyde was a bit of both. He had been right to push Megan away. He loved her, but he could not love her in the way she needed or deserved. So when Clyde looked up and stared him in the eye, making Seamus promise to love her enough for the both of them, Seamus had nodded and prayed that Megan would let him. And then a miracle had happened. She had run into his arms. She had sought him out and clung to him, sobbing her pain and grief for another man. But she had come to him. He had been so afraid that she wouldn't, that she would run away and curl into herself,
blocking out anything and everyone in an effort to get away from the pain, that she wouldn't let him help her. But Megan had come to him. She loved him. Maybe not the same way she had loved Clyde, but maybe that was a good thing. It had not let her see the truth, that she had lost Clyde a long time ago when he had failed to return, opting to fight rather than seeking happiness and the love of a good woman. Seamus had almost made that same mistake, but then he had met Megan. She did not know it, but she had saved him, and now it was his turn to save her. Conan carried Mari up 3 flights of stairs before he let her down. He wanted to carry her all 7 flights to the solar, and he had intended to, but that had been a foolish ambition, especially if he wanted to do anything tonight other than recover and pass out. Mari smiled up at him and then laughed.
"I guess Hucker won," she giggled.
He frowned. "Won what?" She reached up on her tippy-toes and gave him a light kiss.
"You didn't think men were the only ones who gambled on ridiculous things. When you announced that you were carrying me up to the solar, we all knew that was never going to happen. We all picked a level that you would stop at. Hakaha had 3.
Conan pursed his lips together, and he contemplated picking Mari up and carrying her the rest of the way. 3 seemed like a very embarrassing number.
"What number did you have? And you better not say 1.
Mari grinned. 7. When he reached down to pick her up, she scooted back.
"While I have no doubt that you could carry me all 7 flights, I have other plans for our last night in a real bed."
Conan had nearly toppled over in shock when Laurel had said that she and Connor wanted them to have the solar for their wedding night, especially as it would be some time before the couple slept in comfort again. Then Conan had seen Connor's face and realized his brother had not been so generous and was not happy that his wife had given away their bedchambers, even if it was for only 1 night. But Conan was not interested in making Connor happy. He only cared about Mari's happiness, and there was no doubt she would love sleeping in the solar. And after he got to explore every inch of her body a few times, they would take a break, go to the top of the tower, and enjoy the view. Just thinking about it made Conan salivate. He tapped Mari's bottom.
"Hurry up, woman. For weeks my body has been racked with pain without its only cure. You."
Mari had started her ascent, but stopped and turned around. She was on a higher step, and it almost brought them face to face. She curled her arms around his neck and said in a husky voice,
"I ache for you too."
"Mushed," he muttered.
His hands were on her hips and then her bottom, squeezing her tightly against him so she could feel the evidence of his desire. Bari's eyes grew large with excitement. She gave him a quick peck, turned around, and dashed up the remaining 4 stories to the solar. The room was massive and very masculine, and in the middle was an enormous bed.
"How did they ever get that up here?"
Conan came behind her and pulled her back to his chest. He nuzzled her neck and murmured,
"They didn't. My father had it built in this room."
Mari pulled free and went to look out the window. She had had no idea she would be able to see so far from this high up. She could see the tents and the campfires lit in the distance. The bonfires were mostly obstructed by the curtain wall, but she could see that the crowds had not begun to die down. The party would last for several more hours. Mari was glad she did not have to wait until everyone else was ready to sleep for her and Conan to finally be together. Then, as the world decided to at last sleep, she and Conan would awake and leave. They wanted to be gone by sunrise, embarking on their life and future at last. Conan took off his shoes, belt and tartan, and tossed them to the side. He then walked up to Mari and hugged her from behind. Slowly, he began to pull pins out of her hair and then tugged free the last ties that kept the intricate weave in place. Plunging his fingers into the thick mass, he gently pulled until the dark locks hung free. Next,
Very lightly, he slid her gown off her shoulder, revealing skin for him to savor and kiss. "You happy?"
"I am now," she sighed, leaning back into him.
At first, planning the wedding was fun.